Jacopo, so I just want to underline that we actually have known each other for a while. So I think we did our first interview in like 2017 or something. Like that was a long time ago.
Yeah, I remember it. At the time I was working in Italy. It was beginning of 2017. Yeah, I think it was for one of the games we published when I was in Italy. Yeah.
But since then you had this, you did travel a lot, right? And you worked in a lot of different places and companies. Can you give us like a little bit of a, I guess like an intro? Tell us about how your journey in Italy started and where did you end up eventually?
Yeah, sure. So the journey in Italy started when I was quite young. I mean, I've always been into like computers since I was like 11 or 12. So I was just like doing websites and programming, and has been all my youth years, basically my teen years, pre-teen years, actually, let's say. And then when I turned 17 or 18, I got this offer from my mom. Knew like this guy working this tech company, so he was like, "You want to work in tech? Maybe I can help you a bit, like getting you like a small job to start." So I did my first experience was as a C# programmer in Unity for this company. Was creating I worked with them to create this virtual experience to basically visualize the raw expo online. So the raw expo was something we had before expo, which is the bigger and most famous one in Milan. And I brought for them this application, which was procedurally generating all the fare, so you could visualize it. It wasn't in VR because VR wasn't a thing at the time. This was like 2013, like it was really like 10 years ago. And it was like a 3 months job, and I was like paid like 300 euros. And it was like working full time for 3 months. But I was like, I wanted to drop out. And my mother was like, "No, don't drop out. Like, keep doing it because it's an amazing opportunity. You don't realize it." And I was like, "Yeah, that's okay." At the time, I didn't realize it. But then after many years, that was probably the kickstart for everything else. And basically after that, I finished the project and I started going to the university and I started studying computer science. And while I was doing university, after a couple of years, university is the first course of studies is 3 years in Italy. And then you do eventually 2 years and then another year of master if you want. In the first 3 years, at some point I was offered, I wasn't offered, I found like a job offer. Which was for a very small indie studio in Rome, and it was a Unity programmer position. I always wanted to do video games, but I almost like dropped the idea because in Italy it wasn't a thing. Like in 2012, 2013, you had maybe like really big studios, maybe like two in Italy or three. Not counting Ubisoft Milan, because Ubisoft, it's Ubisoft. I'm just counting Italian studios like Milestone. So I was like, yeah, I will try to do this. I had the interview, and there were like a few other people, and in the end they picked me for the job. The reason why I was picked for the job, they told me, was because I was the only one who basically had like something made home. So I did something at home by myself. So instead of having like, you know, I did university, I went to university, I had this master, I had this certificate, I had none of that, but I had few projects that I did in my spare time by myself. So basically that's what gave me the job, which was something I found out I also look, you know, like these years when I hired someone. That's what I look for. I worked with like these four guys, and this was for a game called Blockstorm, which was a voxel shooter at the time, and was published by Indiegala, which was a small company in Rome, which used to do bundles, basically, like Humble Bundle, basically something similar to that. And they wanted to start getting into publishing and game distribution and game, they weren't already in game distribution. They wanted to get into game publishing and game development. So we did this small project, which in the end, he sold like about 1 million copies, which wasn't like small at all. So it was a great success. And that was another kickstart for other projects. So after that, I got hired by Indiegala itself. They let me do a 6 months course in digital production, which I did at the Rainbow. Well, they didn't pay for it, but they let me do it, which means they let me go for 6 months. And they were like, you do this course, and when you come back, we hire you back. So that's what I done. So it was a digital production course, which was focused on all the different departments and areas of development. Of a movie, because the course was more about like cinema and CGI, not really about video games. So I studied Maya, I studied animation, I studied compositing, VFX, lighting, all these, all the basics, which then I realized I could apply to video games as well. Anyway, so that was another kickstart, like really helped a lot. And when I came back to Indiegala, they hired me to work as basically a ninja. That's what they call them in Italy, or at least they used to call them back in the days. I'm not sure if that's a term that is common outside of Italy as well in game development. But in Italy, small companies, they used to hire like ninja developers. So it's basically someone that can do anything, and which technically means you pay or her less, and they can do 10 people jobs at the same time. But that's the reality when you have like no money and the company is small. So they hired me like that, and then slowly the team growed over the following year, and we were developing Die Young, which was like an open world made in Unreal Engine. And we started with the version 4.0, and we got to literally the 0.420. So we went through the entire development cycle of Unreal Engine. We worked with the Unreal Engine developers as well, who came into like our studio sometimes to see what we were doing and give tips to us. So that was really cool. And then with the time, I discovered that what I was doing at the time, I was working in art, but I was still interested in programming because that's how I started. But at the time, I completely switched to art because I was told at some point during my previous jobs that I couldn't do art and programming at the same time. That you have to pick one. But at some point, I like, you know, working with Unreal Engine, I think Unreal Engine gave the possibility to technical art to really flourish. Like it gave like developers tools. Stuff like scripting or Blutilities, which was the scripting at the time. Artists could work more with programmers and get into these like intermediate roles, like a technical artist, where you could do a bit of both, like art and technical stuff. So I started getting into this technical artist role, which I started discovering at the time. So I started basically taking care of all the technical side of things in the artistic departments for the games. So it was like game optimization, texture compression, shading, scripts, tool sets for the artists and the animators. And this, I kept doing this for like, I think, 2 or 3 more years. I worked for Indiegala 4 years. So at the end of the development cycle for Die Young, that's when I applied for Ubisoft Reflections. More like a joke. I was like really burned out at the time because the production for Die Young, it was quite a big game for 10 people. And it literally led all of us to burnout.
It was a pretty famous title. I remember it was like almost everywhere on in the press and so on.
Yeah, it got quite some success. I wouldn't say got the same success as Bloxstorm, But I mean, Blockstorm had a different setup because it was a multiplayer game, and we had the editor maps, the editor characters. So it was made more like the concept was more appealing to players because they could create a community around it. While Die Young, it was more like a single player game, but still, it got some success. I mean, enough success for the company to keep developing other games because the company is still active, so they're doing really great. To achieve that, really we had to give a lot. I remember like once I worked like 26 hours without stopping to complete the Gamescom demo for one of the final releases. Like we were really close to release and we had to just work overnight to complete the demo, and it was quite stressful. So I applied to Ubisoft Reflections, which is the studio Ubisoft has in Newcastle, which is the north of England. And they called me back, which was quite a surprise. So I had the interview with them. It was for a technical artist role. And the skill set that I developed in the past like 3-4 years was basically perfect for that role. So this was quite lucky, I have to say. I didn't prepare to get to this point. Like I just worked. So I worked, I got interested into stuff. I studied at home. I was investigating on all these things by myself. And most of it was because I had to deliver the game. So we had to deliver this game, and I was responsible for these things, and being responsible for these things led me to learn how to do them. I have to say, like, these can be okay, but also not. Because when you learn by yourself, you don't know if you're learning the right way. So when I went to Ubisoft Reflections, the first thing that I did was, like, you know, to double check if what I learned was correct. And most of it was, some stuff was like completely, So I learned from more experienced people than me, which was you working at Ubisoft by like since like years. I quickly moved to a senior position after a year. And I was, suddenly I found myself working on the main missions team for the Division 2, which was quite a big Ubisoft game. That was a really fun experience, really great. I learned a lot. Great people, probably the best people I've ever worked with. Ubisoft has got a lot of problems recently. I have to say, it never happened to me to see those. I was, I witnessed an episode with my girlfriend at the time in the studio, which was really, really bad. But I later spoke about it. But this was just a developer. It wasn't like people up in the ranks. But apart from that, I have some really nice memories about the times at Ubisoft. And after that, after we finished the project in which like I was leading the technical art team and for the mission side of things, and providing tips and help for the open world side because I had experience in that context due to the previous projects I worked on, like Die Young. We finished the project, we worked on the DLC, and this was, I think, about 2 years and a half later. Again, as a joke, I applied to Rockstar New York. So it's always been my dream to be in New York. It's like a kid thing. So since I was a kid, because of my stepbrother, when I was 11, one day he brought me he lived in America. He brought me like this T-shirt, you know, like Eco Unlimited, which is like an hip hop brand. And I was 11; I had no idea. So, start looking into it. That led me into like hip hop and all this stuff. I don't want to get too much into that, but that developed the dream of seeing America in my brain and this kind of culture. So they didn't reply to me And that really upset me because I was like, I want at least a no. Like I want like so I send it again, and the guy who was my lead at the time replied to me, was like, I'm glad you resent it because we missed it the first time. So that's something I always suggest to everybody. Like when you send a CB, send it at least two or three times. And that's even more true now that I, at Rockstar, I do hire people and I see the amount of CVs that we receive. It's humanly kind of almost impossible to make sure you don't miss at least one, even if you do your best, like checking every day, like it's it could always slip, you know. So yeah, they replied, and I applied to the New York studio, and they were like, okay, we can hire you, but you need to work 1 year in the UK. Because to get a working visa, you need to first work 1 year in another branch, and then they can move you with a transfer visa. And this was 2019. I was like, yeah, sure. And they asked me in what studio I would like to work, between Edinburgh and Leeds and London. And I remember choosing Leeds because it was easier for me to go back home, basically, than Edinburgh. And also it was more central to the UK, which means I could attend more events and things. Nothing to take off Edinburgh, because Edinburgh is an amazing city. I've been many times since. So beautiful. But it was more a convenience thing to fly back to Italy, basically. So I moved to Leeds, and I started working there. Leeds was also another incredible city. I loved it. And I ended up living there for 3 years, because 1 year after, obviously, you know what happened in 2020, and the visas all got like locked, so I had no chance to get my visa. And I few times, like, this basically became like a huge question mark, because I was like, is this gonna end? Are they gonna open the visas again? And this was 2020, and I was like, no idea. But for some reason, I kept like holding tight for like 2020 to 21, 21 to 2022. And it finally happened in 2022. And in 2023, I got here. So it took a couple of years more. But I'm glad that I hold tight to it, because I didn't let it go. And now I'm here, always working with Rockstar. So the same project, the same role. The same people as well, because I used to work with the New York studio since the day one. And yeah, now I'm in New York working as a technical artist for their team. And my role completely changed, by the way, over time. I've been in all sort of different eras of development. So I worked from shaders when I was in Die Young, scripts, animation. I basically did everything on Die Young. And then in Ubisoft Reflections, I mostly worked on shadings and tools. So like creating bespoke shaders, there's one on my station, which is like a big aquarium, and mostly like tools for development and optimization. And I did a lot of optimization on the Xbox and PS4 set of things for the missions. And then when I moved to Rockstar, I basically moved to a pipeline developer. So now I work mostly on tools and pipelines for motion capture animation, and it's mostly programming. I did some shading work, but like very small stuff, very bespoke stuff.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM, then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favorite podcast platforms now.
Jakob, I have a question. So it was, you did do send a lot of those. I'm trying to say that it was very successful for somebody who is always trying to apply to companies as a joke. So you did very well.
Fair enough. And also didn't mention that actually when I applied to Ubisoft, I applied to Rare as well. So I had like two offers. Rare was, I almost picked Rare because they were working on Sea of Thieves at the time. And I loved that game. Like so for being a game developer, I actually don't play that much. I play just like few games that really get like, you know, I don't know, have a certain effect on me. So they get me stuck on the screen. Like, for example, I played Divinity Original Sin 2, which for me was amazing. Really like the Dungeons and Dragons feelings. Recently been playing God of War Ragnarok, and Sea of Thieves was one of those games. Like I played with my friends on it and for hours and hours and hours. It was so fun. And they were working on it and they have an incredible, like their studios is like in the countryside of England. So you will go out from the studio, and which is like this building inside between the nature, and you have like woods around you, like fields. I remember while I was doing my interview, like we were walking around and there was a lead programmer doing yoga, like in a little field. It was like, was really cool. But I don't exactly remember what led me to choose. I do. I mean, it was kind of like for the contract that I was being offered. Coming from Italy, this is actually quite important for an Italian character, because in Italy we have the idea of find a job and you want like an indeterminate contract. It's like a permanent contract. And once you get that done, don't let it go, because job is quite difficult to find in Italy. Nowadays, things are a bit different, but at the time it was like a myth. And when I was getting this job in the UK, they were offering me a Rare, like more a contractor role. And I was like so scared, because I was like, I'm moving to UK with a contractor role for 1 year and then they might let me go. Which probably wouldn't have gone like that, but like I didn't want to risk it. I picked Reflections. I have to say it was a great choice in the end. Like, it was really super fun. It was a great project. Maybe I didn't pick it for the most noble of the reasons, but yeah, it was really scary to move abroad, you know, so I got the safest option.
So I have this question. So basically you had this amazing career, having worked in Italy and UK and now in the United States, and you also work with Ubisoft. From your experience, especially since you're hiring right now as well, what are companies looking in the developers when they're, especially technical guys who work with like art and tech art and so on, what are like the main things that they're looking for?
So I can tell you that the main thing from what I see, so this might not be true entirely for all the industry, but from what I've seen, actually I've seen different things. so I wouldn't say there is probably like a unique rule set. I will not specify in what company, but I'll tell you what I've seen. So in one place, I've observed that they just wanted pure talent. So they wanted like people who was hungry and who could deliver stuff. So even if they didn't have a lot of experience, they wanted the fire in their eyes. Like they wanted to feel that person could smash the world in the company, really like literally make things big. In other place, I found doubt that we've been looking for personality, character. So even, and I think this is because people, maybe things are changing. From what I also read, companies try to hire less, like ninja or like solo developers, but more like they prefer like less skilled developers, but I can work more in group because the group, you know, the group result is way better usually, even if you don't have like super skilled developers, then the result delivered by a single developer was like incredibly skilled because that developer will burn out at some point. So it will leave or whatever. Or it will become toxic. And trust me, this is something I've seen a lot. Myself, I've been hired to replace a toxic developer. So I can tell you, this was like a guy who was like a ninja dev who was like doing everything by themselves. And then he got like to a point where he was calling people like stupid or stuff like that, which wasn't okay. And then they made him leave basically. And they had to restructure the entire development process because without realizing this guy had all of the development process under his wing, and the other developers were just doing like, you know, like small things. So I think things are changing, and now I think for developers, obviously you need to work on your skills and, you know, to work on your portfolio, which is really important. That's one of the most important things you have to have ready. Even if you're a programmer, it doesn't matter. You need to have worked on something by your own because it shows passion. But on the other hand, it's as much as important than a portfolio to work on your character, to work on your skill set, to not like not take like things personally. You know, like you will have to deal with a lot of different people, so you be aware that when someone does something, it doesn't do it to hurt you, or to be, maybe it's not personal to you. All these kind of things are really getting really important in studios nowadays. And I personally think it's correct. So that's what we look the most when we hurt someone.
Jakob, so we've been through some changes in the last couple of years, especially like with AI and how it disrupts the process and so on. And it's not that AI is kind of like this new thing, because we had these tools, and Ubisoft is probably one of those companies that was doing a lot in that direction. They've been building those incredible animation tools and stuff like that. And, you know, Algorithmic had AI for texture production back in, like, I don't know, like a couple of years ago. And my question is, like, as a technical specialist who also works a lot with games and with like shaders, and the tech art aspect is something that you know very well, how do you think AI tools are to be used in video games? Like, what are like the areas where people would benefit the most out of using this kind of like neural network based technology?
So I do work with and I worked with the, like, using AI tool sets, or like as a base for my tools in different companies quite a few times, even before these days. You know, there was really a thing before a few years ago. But I would say, now it really depends on what you're trying to achieve. The neural networks don't have a 100% correct result, quite never. So you always need, like, they will not replace human work, like, for a very, very long time, in my opinion, because from what I see now, I've tried to write tools that were basically try to do what people do manually, but like stuff that you cannot automate with a simple script. You know, it's stuff that is based on logic, what you see on screen, and you need to adjust it a bit. You know, so you try to make tools using AI that do these kind of things, using neural networks and models, but the result was always like 97%, 90-80%. So we ended up with a tool that was generating this kind of data that always had to go through an additional check anyway and eventually fix it. Be aware that when I say 97% or 98%, it doesn't mean that you have a 2% of cases in which the result is 100% accurate. No result will be accurate. There will always be like an error gap in the final result. I still believe they're amazing tools, and the concept is it's really fascinating. But it's all stuff still in development. There are some applications in which, you know, you can use AI to randomly generate stuff and then start from there, like the art generators that we've been having or texture generators. That's okay, I will say, because those results, like art is abstract, like can be abstract, and then you can work on top of it. But when you have like a deterministic system which needs to produce a specific result, that's where AI is still not ready for, I believe. So you have, in my opinion, it's working, it starts to working very well in art. I don't think it will replace artists. That's a very complex matter to discuss about, but I don't think it will happen, or it won't happen anytime soon, or it probably won't happen ever. Because you will always need like bespoke piece of art that need, you know, like someone to adjust it in a certain place. Maybe you want to add a certain touch or a certain feel to it. That's not something that AI can do. But you can use it as a base, and that's great. Or for like, you know, other small elements that you don't really give a lot of attention in a game. So artists can focus on bigger content and more like hero content. So that's great.
So with this technology kind of moving forward, where do you see kind of like the biggest changes in game production pipeline coming? Like, is it gonna, because remember we went through big change in them, how material worked, and now we have substance tools. We went through a huge change with, you know, procedural generation, and now we have these amazing stuff, you know, done in Houdini and in Blender and, you know, a bunch of other tools. Now we have Epic putting a lot of effort into developing more of the Unreal and kind of like getting more features there. From your perspective, having come from studios who have a lot of proprietary tech as well, what do you think in the next, you know, 5 years, where everything is going? Is the industry still going to rely a lot? Are we going to rely on like nanites? Are we going to rely on stuff that AI is doing? Or maybe there's something else that will entirely change? Because a lot of years ago, we talked a lot about that photogrammetry is going to be the big thing and everything's going to look photorealistic, and megascans is going to be the main thing. But what's your angle right now? Like, what do you think is going to happen?
So I think right now, or at least like in the past couple of years, the big changes have been mostly revolving around nanite, which is the amount of triangles, you know, that you can render in the screen, which has been one of the biggest bottlenecks in game development. Like, I remember when working on Die Young and trying to optimize meshes and loads, I was doing some insane tricks that Unreal developers asked me how I was doing it, because they added in Unreal Engine 5 then, which was like, for example, generating terrain loads by maintaining the foliage, which at the time wasn't supported by Unreal Engine, but I found a bug in the software so I could still do that. That was quite incredible to find. Was really lucky to find as well, because it was just random tweaking. But the lighting. So Lumen, for example, is being great in Unreal Engine 5, but I can tell you that like that's not that new. Like Lumen is pretty much the same global illumination that you see in other games like The Division, which is quite old. So they basically have these probes, which like they spawn on a grid, and this probe get like basically shot like a cube map and get light information. They pass to other probes and they apply as a post-process on the full screen result, rendered result. It's not really innovating. They added it, but that stuff exists since like a few years. It was used in other games like Uncharted, I think it was Static, I don't remember, but The Division 1 or 2 have like that dynamic solution. And they're quite older games. I don't know. Like, personally, I think, but it might be a bit of an unpopular opinion, that we are a bit stuck. I don't really see a lot of innovation. Like, Nanite is a great thing. Is really powerful. That for me is one of the, like, probably the only really big thing that I've seen in the past couple of years. Ray tracing, it's getting big right now, but it's still quite high end. Like, it's not like a thing. Like, I wouldn't think about, usually we use the high end as a criteria to identify what's new in gaming, but that's wrong, because very few people can afford high-end machines, and also most of the people, I would say, probably still play on consoles, which do not really support that high-end ray tracing. So until you can make that ray tracing work on intermediate or like medium solutions, then that you can call it like an advancing technology. There is a lot of VR going around, for example, which it seems like it's getting into the market, but it's really slow paced. I've seen some really good stuff with the PlayStation VR 2 right now. They have like some really nice, like a lot of great improvements in graphics and performances. Personally, not a fan, but I think it's a great tech. But what I think video games need to sort out, and what like the industry needs to sort out, is anything technical, is the production side of things. So we could start using AI instead of generating content and start planning better. Like, a lot of studios I worked in, they don't really have a great production, which ends up in people, doing crunch or missing deadlines, and eventually feeling guilty because they miss a deadline while it's not their fault. So instead of enhancing tech, which actually we got quite much to the edge of the parabola, like we're not really going, there's nothing really groundbreaking. We could probably focus more on other departments rather than like tech and graphics, like production. I think AI could do a great job at that, because if you analyze, let's say, the production data for the last 20 years, you collect all the bugs, all the tracking, and you can create models that can tell you, like, I want to create this game, like, how long will it take, realistically? And that AI will do a great job at it. But that's unpopular opinion. Not really focused on tech and art, because I believe it's not really growing a lot more.
It's actually an interesting take on it, because we're in a way, video game industry is so fixated on the visual side of thing that we often forget that there are other elements to it as well. And remember, even like if you take an example of Rockstar. At the time when like GTA, I think 3 came out, that it was very, it was a groundbreaking experience in terms of like how sandbox gameplay could be realized. But at the same time, there were a lot of technical limitations to that game, and it was running very well even on less powerful systems. So it was running on my computer back at the time, which was not great. And when I think about video game development in general, I always think about these restrictions, kind of like guardrails that we have. And I feel like, a company like Rockstar, they really know how to play between those restrictions. And another company is maybe, Hideo Kojima's when he's doing stuff like Metal Gear 5, it's Afghanistan, and it's such an open space, but there's so much that you can do there, and it's not really, you know, it's not really super heavy on like the visuals, and it's not really very heavy on like the polycon. It's barely desert and mostly, and I do feel like if we start thinking in those kind of like guardrails, take on it, right? We will start finding kind of like more ideas, new ways of doing things, and this will give us kind of new direction. But I do agree, like even like with the fancy visual effects, like how much do they actually add to the game? Like, are they really that important?
I believe. Before Unreal Engine, you had. Can't recall the name right now, but I worked the Unreal Development
UDK.
UDK, yes.
Yeah.
Unreal Engine was a thing, but it was like internal, like you had to buy it. I don't even know if you could buy it, to be honest, but it was quite expensive anyway. But most of the studios had like an internal engine, like in-house technologies. So that's what brings my English today is not the best, groundbreaking content, because you have your tools, and with your tools you try to create something unique. But like, I love Unreal Engine, I worked with it, I think it's a great, incredibly powerful tool that gives possibility to a lot of people to develop, but like big companies are using it now. And to be honest, it's, if you are a AAA big company and you're using Unreal Engine, they will eventually edit its source code so it can work differently. But at the core is the same. So you're doing what Unreal Engine lets you do, which is, yeah, it's amazing. But the footprint of a game, the texture of a game, the flavor, the graphically and also like technically, it comes from the engine. So if all the games use the same engine, like you will end up, for how amazing this engine could be, you will end up seeing all the same footprint everywhere, which is what scares me a bit. Because yeah, you will get like amazing features, amazing ray tracing, amazing performances, great texture compression. Is that what's important? Like, and I say it from a technical artist perspective, which is this kind of take off my job a bit, because I like Unreal Engine makes my work, my job easier, because it gives me the tool to do it. So, and I can tell you a lot of other in-house engines copied their technologies because it allows for these intra-department work, like technical art, to happen. But I'm really scared about having just the same footprint and the same soup, basically, at some point.
All right. Jacopo, we're almost out of time. I have like last question. What advice would you give to people who want to get into the industry, start working as technical artists? Where do they go? What do they learn? What school do you recommend? Maybe some courses, maybe just start working.
Yeah, there is a lot online. So I would say I did a digital production course. That's true. I would say a basic course can help you, like kickstart you. But at the same time, I would say like you don't really need it, but it really depends on the person. Some people need someone, you know, to at least like help them start, and then they can go ahead by themselves. Other people can just like start by themselves. So it really depends on who you are. I would say like think about that. Think about like, do you need maybe the help of someone to start? There's no shame in that. If you do, maybe like a course is better for you. If you think you can open YouTube or buy books like Real-Time Rendering, which is a perfect book for starting, like that's the Bible for a technical art. I would say buy that book and read it through. Then go that way. You don't need a course. But definitely start working. And like, even if you don't have experience, start working for a small studio. I mean, nowadays, big studios have been hiring junior technical artists as well. But you need at least like a couple of little projects or some art station, let's say, if you work in shaders, maybe some tools if you work in tools. Also, like this is a technical artist is, you can work in a lot of different departments. So that's also, you need to understand that as well first. What you want to work in. Do you want to work in animation? Do you want to work in shading? Do you want to work in VFX? Do you want to work in tools? Do we want to work in art? So like providing maybe like tools for artists. And really like in AAA companies, it's going to be difficult that you work on, you know, all the departments. But you might do it if you work in a small company. So maybe the best way to start, instead of going to a big AAA company and start as a junior TA and focus on a little thing, because that will make you focus on a small thing, have fun in a small company. It will be maybe like more work, but it will form you like in more like 360. Like it will give you like a better view of the entire development process. And I think it will help you being a better technical artist later on.
Jacopo, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for the time. Thank you so much for dedicating this hour to talk to our audience. Really appreciate it. We'll leave the links to the description of your art station in the comments so people can check out and maybe ask you some questions if they have anything. Thank you so much and good luck.
Thank you very much, Yudo.
Thanks for enjoying another episode of the 80 Level Roundtable podcast. Check out upcoming episodes on the 80 Level website at 80.lv. Join our career site at 80.lv/RFP. And share our podcast with friends and on your social networks.